Mom, Dad, I'm not throwing shade, but the whole New Year's resolution thing, kind of slipping, no offense. Anyway, my best friend Jenny's dad, crushing it. He uses Blue Apron. He says he ordered one pan assemble and bake meals and these things called meal kits. They're all super easy to make. He keeps yelling, protein and fiber, baby. Also, the food, we tried it. So good. So maybe you check it out or whatever. Blue Apron. Get 50% off your first two orders plus free shipping with code LISTEN50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. One thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. And for decades, Angie's helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. Get all your jobs done well at Angie.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is Sunday, April 10th, 2022. I'm Blois Olson, and this is Sunday Take. We are just grinding away at the 2022 political season and election season. And this past week was certainly a busy one on the national scale. The U.S. Senate confirmed Ketanji Brown Jackson as the latest Supreme Court justice, the first African-American woman to join the Supreme Court, allowing President Biden to check a campaign promise off his to-do list. Congress also working to find one last tranche of COVID relief for businesses that didn't receive it in the first batch. Representative Dean Phillips was at the front of that. Meanwhile, in St. Paul, the legislature is now on break for the Easter Passover holiday. They'll be gone all week. They'll be in their districts. Some of them will be on spring break. But it was a rush this week for the House to get their bills ready and pass them, the Senate to get their bills ready and pass them. And in some cases, we have some ability to see the different points of view, and they're very different. The House Democrats obviously are focused very much on spending. Some of that over $9 billion surplus. Meanwhile, the Senate Republicans led the way to pass a bill in bipartisan fashion that cut taxes more than any other bill in Minnesota history. Now, those are the positions that are predictable. And so far, this legislative session has been somewhat predictable. Even though there's a $9 billion surplus, there's supposed to be a bonding bill. There are these issues that haven't gotten done. I would say that at least the legislature's positioned to get some of these issues done towards the end of the session, which a few weeks ago, I wasn't so sure of. Governor Walz had a quiet week, but he was in town. And this next week, it's anticipated, and he will travel the state to sell his legislative agenda. He has his State of the State coming up in a few weeks, where he'll make his case for his piece. And then on Friday, early voting started in the primary in Congressional District 1. As always, follow Fluence newsletters at fluence-newsletters.com. Sign up for the Morning Take or the new enhanced Lunch Take. Follow me, Blois Olson, on Twitter. But in this week's show, we have three great interviews. One, we're going to talk to former Governor Tim Pawlenty about what the Republican process for endorsement looks like and how it's changed. We'll talk to Jeff Edinger. He's running as a Democrat in CD1. And we'll talk to the new candidate for the Independence Party for governor, Hugh McTavish. I'm Blois Olson, right back with Sunday Take.
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. keep the flavor, ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
This Sunday, we are kind of running the gamut of races. Our first guest is Jeff Ettinger. He's the former CEO of Hormel Foods in southern Minnesota. He's been a civic leader in Minnesota for a long time. And I'd say somewhat surprisingly, but he'll tell us the real story. He is announced and is running to represent the first congressional district in Congress as a Democrat for the open seat after Representative Hagedorn's passing. Jeff, thanks for joining me today.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate being on the program.
So let's just start. You know, you've been a CEO, you retired there, you've been a community leader with the Hormel Foundation. What is it that prompted you to decide in 2022 to run and run as a Democrat in the first congressional district?
Well, I think I share the building frustration a lot of people have with what's been going on in Washington. We have some really significant challenges confronting us, and there just doesn't seem to be a willingness or an ability to address them. And, you know, I join others with the frustration at the polarization and the hostility. I mean, it just, to me, cried out for some kind of solution to that. And so then at a local level, you know, having lived in the district for 30 years, I worked with all sorts of folks in Congress, from Tim Penny to Gil Gutnick to Tim Walz, and always was able to have kind of an open dialogue and what to me was balanced representation. Just felt like we didn't see that out of Congressman Hagedorn. He seemed to treat the race as sort of a winner-take-all, and he represented half the district. And then on top of that, obviously, the events of January 6th, to me, were really upsetting. To watch our nation's capital be attacked, and then that same night to have our representative refuse to certify the election was just really an aggravating moment and an embarrassment, I think, for our local district. With all that, I mean, what happened here, though, is, as you mentioned, Congressman Hagedorn's passing and the declaration of a special election. And even with that, I supported Dan Feehan last time, and I would have supported him again. But when he chose not to run, and the clock was ticking on the 2-week filing window, and I started getting calls from folks that, hey, maybe I should consider this, I decided, yeah, maybe I should. I've complained about this from afar for quite a while, and maybe now's the time at this stage in my life that I can take this on and try to bring some balance and some respectfulness and inclusion back to the seat and back to Washington.
You know, I think you raise an interesting thing. It is these issues, the culture, the events of the last few years, depending on what side you're on, you can debate election integrity, you can debate, you know, motivations, even on the Democratic side, the far left versus the middle left. But, you know, I know the first district really well. It has a place for me, like most of Minnesota, that you know, evokes a certain community culture type of person. As you're talking to people, because, you know, look, this will get played out on TV. It'll get played out on the radio and in social media and all those things. But as you're talking to neighbors, even if they're Republicans or even if they disagree with you, what is it that is making them, what are they thinking about in 2022 that maybe we don't hear about on Fox News or MSNBC?
Well, here, a lot of people are sharing with me this notion that the voices on the extreme seem to sort of have the ears of America, but they don't represent America fully. And I have no problem with the notion that we should have a diverse set of voices representing a wide set of districts from across the country. But I think we need more voices in the middle. I think we need more people who are seeking balanced solutions, who are willing to reach across the aisle and look for those. And that's, I'm not just stating that because I think from an opportunistic standpoint that, oh, that's the way to win in CD1. It's what I am. It's what I've always been. I haven't been a super politically active person, but I've always been a moderate, problem-solving oriented person who I think has earned respect from people across the spectrum.
One of the things about the first district is obviously agriculture. You are a former CEO of a large food ag business. There's this kind of mantra, and it's an undertone. It's not, you know, super loud, but there's an undertone of the agribusiness has gotten too big and that farms have gotten too big and that there's not small farms the way there used to be. When you think about food agriculture from farm to, you know, through processor's table, are there things that our country or Congress should be doing differently on ag policy to ensure that we A, are sustainable and B, that we're making sure that this doesn't become kind of only big business?
Well, I can tell you from the Hormel standpoint, we never owned hog farms in Minnesota. So we've always been partners with family farms of all different sizes. I think the marketplace, honestly, is opening up so that you can have both kind of large scale, cost oriented producers, but also niche producers. I think our policies that are encouraging green and regenerative farming techniques, I think are useful. And I think we should be providing those more often. I'm hearing from folks in the district that we really need to think about help for new farmers. We need to figure out that generational transfer to make sure that if a family farm can stay in the family, that there are interested people in the next generation, that we make that easy to do and not a huge tax burden or problem. And I think there might be ways to provide financial and other aid for new farmers who want to come into the marketplace.
I'm talking to Jeff Ettinger. He's a Democrat. He's running for Congress in the first district. He announced this week that he'd raised over $140,000 in his campaign and is clearly one of the front runners on the Democratic side. We talked about ag. We've talked about kind of the culture, healthcare, the Mayo Clinic, the pandemic. Reflecting on where we've been with the pandemic or where we're going with the politics of the pandemic, what's your view and what do you tell people about whether it's vax mandates, mask mandates, and or the way the governor handled the pandemic that you either agree with or disagree with?
Well, first, I think we all need to recognize governments around our country and around the world were confronted with this unprecedented challenge. I think Governor Walz has done a very nice job of trying to steer the middle and to try to be balanced. I helped on a couple of roundtables and panels for him during the early days of COVID. And I know they were very open to listening to lots of voices on that. I understand the frustrations of parents, you know, who question, okay, do my kids still need to be wearing masks in school? I also understand the frustration over mandates. I personally don't favor government mandates for vaccines, but I've taken the vaccine. I encourage all my friends to take the vaccine. It's a blessing that we were able to get them so quickly. But, you know, it's just, again, an issue that to me was sort of a medical scientific challenge that somehow became a product of the polarization and everybody sort of fell into camps of how to handle it based on their politics. And hopefully we can move beyond that.
Jeff Ettinger is my guest. Final question. I always say people should get to know people when they're running. What do you do for fun? What do you do in your free time?
Sure. Well, Leanne and I moved to Austin 30 years ago, and we're still proud members of the community and are active in the community. I like playing poker with my friends from Austin and Rochester, or hitting the bike trails in Austin or Lanesboro, or skiing at Welch Village. Those are things I enjoy doing. I grew up in LA, but we've lived in Southern Minnesota now for 30 years. And I just really appreciate the open spaces and friendly folks that are in our area.
Sounds great. Thanks for joining me today, Jeff.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Up next, the new candidate for governor from the Independence Party. I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take. Welcome back to Sunday Take. The second cup of coffee this Sunday morning is with Hugh McTavish. Hugh announced this week he's running for governor. He's running under the Independence Alliance, or the formerly known as the Independence Party banner. And he joins me now on Sunday Take. Hugh, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me, boys.
Let's just start by, you're a non-traditional candidate, you're a businessman, you're a scientist. What would draw you to decide to run for governor, especially, during this kind of culture of toxicity and partisanship in Minnesota?
I first started thinking about running for governor really with when the lockdown started, because I thought this was a terrible mistake. I think facts since then have proven I was right. And I had this idea, but I do think I'm uniquely qualified kind of to unite people because of my anti-lockdown views. So that appeals to a lot of Republicans. I've done radio talk shows and stuff about my book, COVID Lockdown Insanity, opposing the lockdowns. I like those people, but I'm a liberal. I've pretty much always voted Democratic. The main reason really I'm running is I had this idea of jury democracy, which I've had for 30 years, and I always thought I'd write a book about it. And then I finally realized, running for office actually implementing it would be a better way to do it, to get it discussed and hopefully implemented. So the concept of jury democracy is that essentially we would add a new house to the legislature that would be randomly drawn people from across the state, about 1,000 randomly drawn Minnesota registered voters, which is a statistically valid sample of the entire voting pool. So, and then have those people sit like a jury does on a civil or criminal trial for one bill or one proposal, and listen to the arguments for and against that bill or proposal, and hear all the evidence, then actually read the bill for themselves, which would put them ahead of many legislators and Congress people, of course, who don't have time to read every bill they consider, and then discuss it in small groups of 12 or so. So that would, my prediction is that will unite us. We will learn that, you'll be in a pool of 12 with people from different parts of the state, different life backgrounds, different political outlooks. And my prediction is you're going to learn you agree with each other a lot more than the press and politicians suggest we do. And also, the proposal will be debated on the merits, on the evidence and the logic, not on name calling and appeals to anger and fear so much as we do in.
Mom, I like to propose a dinner optimization plan for 2026.
Soccer practice every week. Get back late and you're stressed out about making something fast but actually nutritious for dinner.
When Ashley's mom picked me up, I noticed that she made Blue Apron. It came in like a little kit. By the time it was ready, I still had shin guards on. And it was real food, fresh veggies, protein, actual flavor. Take her from the younger generation. We're innovators. Keeping a couple Blue Apron meals around. Not the worst idea.
Get 50% off your first two orders plus free shipping with code LISTEN50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. One thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. And for decades, Angie's helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. Get all your jobs done well at Angie.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. The second cup of coffee this Sunday morning is with Hugh McTavish. Hugh announced this week he's running for governor. He's running under the Independence Alliance, or the formerly known as the Independence Party banner. And he joins me now on Sunday Take. Hugh, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me, boys.
Let's just start by you're a non-traditional candidate. You're a businessman. You're a scientist. What would draw you to decide to run for governor, especially, during this kind of culture of toxicity and partisanship in Minnesota?
I first started thinking about running for governor really with when the lockdown started, because I thought this was a terrible mistake. I think facts since then have proven I was right. And I had this idea, but I do think I'm uniquely qualified kind of to unite people, because of my anti-lockdown views. So that appeals to a lot of Republicans. I've done radio talk shows and stuff about my book, COVID Lockdown Insanity, Opposing the Lockdowns. And I like those people, but I'm a liberal. I've pretty much always voted Democratic. The main reason really I'm running is I had this idea of jury democracy, which I've had for 30 years, and I always thought I'd write a book about it. And then I finally realized, running for office actually implementing it would be a better way to do it, to get it discussed and hopefully implemented. So the concept of jury democracy is that essentially we would add a new house to the legislature that would be randomly drawn people from across the state, about 1,000 randomly drawn Minnesota registered voters, which is a statistically valid sample of the entire voting pool. So, and then have those people sit like a jury does on a civil or criminal trial for one bill or one proposal, and listen to the arguments for and against that bill or proposal, and hear all the evidence, then actually read the bill for themselves, which would put them ahead of many legislators and congresspeople, of course, who don't have time to read every bill they consider, and then discuss it in small groups of 12 or so. So that would... my prediction is that will unite us. We will learn that, you'll be in a pool of 12 with people from different parts of the state, different life backgrounds, different political outlooks. And my prediction is you're going to learn you agree with each other a lot more than the press and politicians suggest we do. And also the proposal will be debated on the merits, on the evidence and the logic, not on, not on name calling and appeals to anger and fear so much as we do in our political campaigns. So I think that's going to unite us. And it will transform politics if we implement that. That's I think about as big a change from elected representative democracy as the elected representative democracy was from monarchy. The 99%, poor people will have real power. The poor and middle class will constitute the majority of the voters, so they will have the majority of the power. The 99% will have 99% of the power. Blacks, women, Native Americans,
yep.
They'll all have numbers and power proportional to their the proportional to the population, okay, without affirmative action or anything.
Got it. So, Hugh, that's a massive change. That's a massive change to our state and very ambitious. So if you run with that concept, it's probably another 2 years at least until that's up and running, because my gut is you have to pass that by some sort of constitutional amendment, or you have to actually get the legislature to pass it, which, you know, may not think it's the greatest idea ever. In those 2 years, what are your priorities as governor to unite Minnesota?
I think I can implement it right away.
How so?
Ultimately we need a constitutional amendment, but I would pledge to sign or veto every bill according to what the jury decides. So every bill that passes the legislature, I'd submit it to the jury for their recommendation or whether I could sign or veto it.
And does the jury get paid?
Yeah, ideally they'd get paid. So that requires constitutional amendment. Well, to have it be required would require a constitutional amendment to actually make it a third house of the legislature. And I would pay them like we pay civil and criminal jurors on civil and criminal trials, except I'd pay them better than we pay them now, and reimburse them, at least if we do it in St. Paul, then probably reimburse outstate people for hotel stays and such.
One of the, you know, my guest is Hugh McTavish. He's an Independence Party candidate for governor. He's talking about his idea of having a jury democracy. So one of the things, you clearly have distinct views on COVID lockdowns. You're saying, you know, either sign or veto bills based on the jury. You know, there's going to be discussions about education, public safety, healthcare in the governor's race. Do you have, or are you going to develop points of view on those, or is everything going to be left to this jury?
I've got points of view on those. I'm willing to leave everything to the jury. I think our education funding is probably about, I don't have a strong view that it's too high or too low. I think it's about right. I do have a strong view that we just abandoned our children for the last 2 years, with the lockdowns and with the mask mandates. And that was a terrible thing to do. And strong views on protecting the environment, opposition to the copper nickel mining near the Boundary Waters, for instance. But even that, I'd be willing to let the jury decide that. On the police, I actually have, I think, an innovative proposal on police, which is to repeal the law that currently requires that in order to fire a police officer, it has to go to arbitration. And the arbitrators routinely overturn any dismissal or I'd repeal that law and probably strengthen it and say that the mayor, the city council, and the police chief in each city have an independent, separate authority to fire any officer they want for any valid reason.
Okay. You know, the history on that, which we'll probably talk about throughout the campaign, you know, would relate to other public employees who, you know, police officers want to be treated like them too. So just as we wrap here, my guest is Hugh McTavish. He's an Independence Party candidate. He's running for governor. Obviously COVID lockdowns got you kind of pumped up. You've written a book about it. Are we past the idea of debating COVID, or do you think people still are fired up about the last 2 years when it comes to kind of how we're going to choose the next governor? And I ask that because, you know, as I analyze the race, I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure if Minnesotans still want to talk about COVID or if they want to move on to other issues. What's your sense?
Oh, I think they probably don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. they probably don't want to talk about it. They just wish this was over with. But I think it is going to be an election issue. We still, you know, Governor Walz and the pro-lockdown people, they still think that this was the correct decision. And they're still talking about if we have another wave of cases that they're going to reinstitute mask mandates, close the schools, whatever, again. So that's, I think we need to get to a point as a society where we realize this was a mistake and we will never make this mistake again.
Sounds great. Hugh McTavish, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
Thank you, Blaise.
When we come back, former Governor Tim Pawlenty on what he thinks the issues are for Republicans running for that valuable endorsement in their race. I'm Blaise Olson. This is Sunday Take. Our final conversation this Sunday is one that I've been thinking a lot about, and it's with former Governor Tim Pawlenty. He joins me now to talk about the dynamics within the Republican race for governor. He was once in a pretty heated battle for the endorsement. He went in, quote, as the underdog in that convention and overcame Ryan Sullivan to win the endorsement and go on to be governor. Governor Pawlenty, thanks for joining me today.
Good morning to you and your listeners, Blaise. Glad to be with you.
So as you reflect back, I mean, obviously, two-term governor, run for president, but that convention is one of those pivotal points where you overcame a well-funded opponent in a very heated, late into the night battle for the endorsement, which ultimately on the Republican side of the ledger really matters. So as you look at this race, not to pick winners and losers, but what do you think's going through these candidates' minds and strategies right now as you think back to your run?
Sure. Well, it's interesting. The one thing you mentioned in your intro there is, you know, the Republicans do have a tradition of respecting that endorsement, at least as judged by the endorsed candidate ultimately going on to win the primary, setting aside the results in the general election. The Democrats have a little more mixed history in that regard, with a number of people not being the endorsed candidate and being able to win in a primary. So in a future show, maybe we should discuss why it's different between the two parties.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But anyhow, to your question, you know, the endorsement process really is sort of the retail phase of the campaign, in that you can, and the math around how many people actually participate is so small that a candidate can actually meet in person almost every one of those delegates to the convention and the alternates. And so, of course, the process starts with the precinct caucuses, which, depending on the year, you know, tens of thousands or more show up. But most of those people do not become delegates to the state convention, which happens in the spring. And it boils down to, you know, a couple thousand people, basically. They tend to be repeat customers, in that people who attended previous conventions attend this year's conventions. That's not entirely true, but a big chunk of those folks are longtime party activists and well-known to candidates and mailing lists and email addresses. But they expect to really get to know you as a candidate. And so media matters and money matters and all of that. But in the end, you got to get to 60% of the vote. And that last 5 or 10%, I think you either get or don't get because of a personal connection or respect that they have for the candidate. And I think I was able to win in 2002 in part because we just doggedly worked to meet every one of those people. And it could have gone either way, you know, between Brian Solomon and I certainly could have gone either way. But I was able to get a slight advantage, I think, because of some of the reservoir of personal connection I had with the delegates. And by the way, it didn't hurt that I was majority leader in the legislature and in the legislature for a decade before that, and traveled the state and getting to know a lot of these people, not just in the context of the months leading up to the convention, but the decade leading up to that convention.
You know, I think that that relationship thing is key. And I, you know, it is a little bit of an inside baseball because it's only April. Most of Minnesota won't start paying attention to this race until 4th of July or the state fair. But, you know, as I've followed these governor's races for 30 plus years now, I am fascinated by the process that brings us the candidates. As you, you know, stay in touch with Republicans today, some of which were probably the same people who were delegates when you were endorsed versus new, younger, and kind of the shift in Republican politics, are there issues that you think delegates are really passionate about or focused on, or personalities, kind of personality traits that you think delegates or activists are thinking about more this year than maybe in previous years?
Yeah, great question. And of course, notwithstanding what I just said about personal relationship, issues and philosophy still matter a lot. So if you are running for a nomination for a political party and you don't align almost entirely with the philosophy and priorities of that party, you're not going to get nominated. So that presumes everything I said earlier, presumes you're acceptable or more in terms of the issues and the philosophy. But like the Democratic Party, the Republican Party has evolved over the last few decades. It used to be sort of a coalition of national defense hawks and social conservatives and what I'd call chamber of commerce, business conservative types, and then kind of center right economic folks. And that was the key pieces of the Republican Party, you know, from say 1964, maybe even further back. But more recently, of course, the rise of Donald Trump has reflected some other things. Of course, the power of his personality, the power of his celebrity, but it also reflected a rise of populism, and I think populism, setting aside his personality, can be a very good thing. It simply means, you know, for the people, of the people, reflective of the people. And that's what politics should be about. But issues like, you know, was the election stolen? Election integrity, issues like, you know, this sort of Donald Trump's view of Republican politics, and not always, by the way, traditional conservative viewpoints. So there has been an evolution from what I call Reagan conservatism to Trump conservatism, not with all the delegates, but with a chunk of them, enough of it to make a difference in an endorsement battle.
My guest is former Governor Tim Pawlenty. We're talking about kind of the inside game of running for governor, the delegate process, the current state of the Republican Party. You've done a few things over the last couple of years with Governor Walz. Obviously, the quote club of former governors is a pretty small group, elite. As you think about the mood of Minnesota or the sense of Minnesota, you know, where do you think the state is today versus, you know, when you left office, or, you know, as you've talked to Governor Walz or as you've watched Governor Walz, you know, where there's an opportunity to either bring the state together or kind of tap some things that maybe people aren't talking about either in the endorsement process because it's too small, or at, you know, the legislature because, you know, they're caught up in their traditional politics right now.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think, boys, if you look back over history, you got to say that Minnesota, of course, leans blue, at least light blue. At times it's been purplish. I'm not talking statewide now, not in congressional districts or legislative districts, because there's pockets of deep blue or deep red all around Minnesota. But as a general proposition, statewide, Minnesota has historically leans blue and sometimes purplish, sometimes light blue, sometimes a little deeper blue. But keep in mind, this is a state that hasn't voted Republican for president of the United States since Richard Nixon. It has the longest unbroken streak of any state in the nation of voting for Democrat in the country, including Massachusetts, Vermont, California, Hawaii, other places that are deemed no more wildly liberal. So that gives you a sense of kind of the built-in historic slash political slash cultural advantage that Democrats have enjoyed in statewide races. And the results kind of reflect that. But in the meantime, things have shifted around a bit. I think it's fair to say that since the elevation of Donald Trump and more recently, rural Minnesota, for the most part, has gone red, with the exception of some of the regional centers like Rochester, Mankato, St. Cloud, and a few others. And then the Democrats, of course, politically own Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the first ring suburbs. So the hinge or swing vote really comes down to a few regional centers and surrounding areas and the second and third ring suburbs. The exurbs are mostly Republican. And the Democrats lost, though, made great gains in, say, 10 years ago in those second and third ring suburbs, and really piled on those gains during the last couple elections when Donald Trump was running. But now they have, with the independent voters and those suburban voters, lost ground. So the Republicans see that combined with redistricting and look at inflation, look at concerns about crime and a variety of other issues and say, we've got a big opportunity this fall. And I think they do.
Final question. what are you doing with your free time now? And and are you having any fun now that you don't get, you know, poked and prodded every day for politics?
Well, I love public service, and I was honored to serve, and I love getting up every day trying to do something meaningful for Minnesota, and I love public policy and meeting people and trying to make a difference. But I sort of hit the end of the road, and so I had to move on to other things. And life is less interesting now in that regard in terms of policy, but it's certainly less stressful. You don't have people wailing on you every day either, so there's some trade-offs involved. So I've been involved in a couple of business things, serving on some boards, but mostly have been semi-retired, boy. So just kind of, I don't want to say goofing off, but more relaxed.
That's okay. It's all right. You and I have known each other a long time. And as a guy who, you know, got paid to wail on you a few times while you were governor, the one thing that people ask or I talk about that I, you know, want to just notice here is that we always were able to shake hands. And we always looked at each other. And there were some days where you said that wasn't very fun. And there were some days where you said that was pretty creative. But I think that that's part of politics, that even if I had a client who was upset with you and we ran an ad or the bus strike, we looked at each other as Minnesotans and shook hands and tried to figure it out. And that's where I'm glad I'm retired from a lot of those kinds of campaigns and things like that, because in this environment, it's not as much fun, and there's not as much acknowledgement that you're human beings and you each have a perspective. So I want to thank you for those years, because we did have fun. And the little secret that we can probably reveal now is that we went to church together. And so we could always talk on Sundays, even though our prospective partners at the time did not always appreciate us solving the world's problems on Sunday.
That's all true. Well, I appreciate that. The analogy, I think, is like a sporting match where you know, you compete as hard as you possibly can. You really want to defeat the other side for a variety of reasons. But at the end, you shake hands and you try to be a good sports person. And I would battle somebody all day long on policy and issues and philosophy. But if we can, at the end of the day, keep it, you know, within a bounds of fairness and decency, that helps a lot. So thank you for saying that. And thank you for reflecting that spirit.
Sounds great. When it's Sunday Take at 9. The legislature's on break next week. Governor's going to tour the state. We'll have it all in Morning Take, which you can sign up for at fluence-newsletters.com. I'm Blois Olson. Thanks for listening. Our final conversation this Sunday is one that I've been thinking a lot about, and it's with former Governor Tim Pawlenty. He joins me now to talk about the dynamics within the Republican race for governor. He was once in a pretty heated battle for the endorsement. He went in, quote, as the underdog in that convention and overcame Ryan Sullivan to win the endorsement and go on to be governor. Governor Pawlenty, thanks for joining me today.
Good morning to you and your listeners, Blois. Glad to be with you.
So as you reflect back, I mean, obviously, two-term governor, run for president, but that convention is one of those pivotal points where you overcame a well-funded opponent in a very heated, late into the night battle for the endorsement, which ultimately on the Republican side of the ledger really matters. So as you look at this race, not to pick winners and losers, but what do you think's going through these candidates' minds and strategies right now as you think back to your run?
Sure. Well, it's interesting. The one thing you mentioned in your intro there is, you know, the Republicans do have a tradition of respecting that endorsement, at least as judged by the endorsed candidate ultimately going on to win the primary, setting aside the results in the general election. The Democrats have a little more mixed history in that regard, with a number of people not being the endorsed candidate and being able to win in a primary. So in a future show, maybe we should discuss why it's different between the two parties.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But anyhow, to your question, you know, the endorsement process really is sort of the retail phase of the campaign, in that you can, and the math around how many people actually participate is so small that a candidate can actually meet in person almost every one of those delegates to the convention and the alternates. And so, of course, the process starts with the precinct caucuses, which, depending on the year, you know, tens of thousands or more show up. But most of those people do not become delegates to the state convention, which happens in the spring. And it boils down to, you know, a couple thousand people, basically. They tend to be repeat customers in that people who attended previous conventions attend this year's conventions. That's not entirely true, but a big chunk of those folks are longtime party activists and well-known to candidates and mailing lists and email addresses. But they expect to really get to know you as a candidate. And so media matters and money matters and all of that. But in the end, you got to get to 60% of the vote. And that last 5 or 10%, I think you either get or don't get because of a personal connection or respect that they have for the candidate. And I think I was able to win in 2002 in part because we just doggedly worked to meet every one of those people. And it could have gone either way, you know, between Brian Solomon and I certainly could have gone either way. But I was able to get a slight advantage, I think, because of some of the reservoir of personal connection I had with the delegates. And by the way, it didn't hurt that I was majority leader in the legislature and in the legislature for a decade before that and traveled the state and getting to know a lot of these people, not just in the context of the months leading up to the convention, but the decade leading up to that convention.
You know, I think that that relationship thing is key. And I, you know, it is a little bit of an inside baseball because it's only April. Most of Minnesota won't start paying attention to this race until 4th of July or the state fair. But, you know, as I've followed these governor's races for 30 plus years now, I am fascinated by the process that brings us the candidates. As you, you know, stay in touch with Republicans today, some of which were probably the same people who were delegates when you were endorsed versus new, younger, and kind of the shift in Republican politics, are there issues that you think delegates are really passionate about or focused on, or personalities, kind of personality traits that you think delegates or activists are thinking about more this year than maybe in previous years?
Yeah, great question. And of course, notwithstanding what I just said about personal relationship, issues and philosophy still matter a lot. So if you are running for a nomination for a political party and you don't align almost entirely with the philosophy and priorities of that party, you're not going to get nominated. So that presumes everything I said earlier, presumes you're acceptable or more in terms of the issues and the philosophy. But like the Democratic Party, the Republican Party has evolved over the last few decades. It used to be sort of a coalition of national defense hawks and social conservatives and what I'd call chamber of commerce, business conservative types, and then kind of center right economic folks. And that was the key pieces of the Republican Party, you know, from, say, 1964, maybe even further back. But more recently, of course, the rise of Donald Trump has reflected some other things. Of course, the power of his personality, the power of his celebrity, but it also reflected a rise of populism. And I think populism, setting aside his personality, can be a very good thing. It simply means, you know, for the people, of the people, reflective of the people. And that's what politics should be about. But issues like, you know, was the election stolen? Election integrity. Issues like, you know, this sort of Donald Trump's view of Republican politics. And not always, by the way, traditional conservative viewpoints. So there has been an evolution from what I call Reagan conservatism to Trump conservatism, not with all the delegates, but with a chunk of them, enough of it to make a difference in an endorsement battle.
My guest is former Governor Tim Pawlenty. We're talking about kind of the inside game of running for governor, the delegate process, the current state of the Republican Party. You've done a few things over the last couple of years with Governor Walz. Obviously, the quote club of former governors is a pretty small group, elite. As you think about the mood of Minnesota or the sense of Minnesota, you know, where do you think the state is today versus, you know, when you left office, or, you know, as you've talked to Governor Walz or as you've watched Governor Walz, you know, where there's opportunity to either bring the state together or kind of tap some things that maybe people aren't talking about either in the endorsement process because it's too small, or at, you know, the legislature because, you know, they're caught up in their traditional politics right now.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think, boys, if you look back over history, you got to say that Minnesota, of course, leans blue, at least light blue. At times it's been purplish. I'm not talking statewide now, not in congressional districts or legislative districts, because there's pockets of deep blue or deep red all around Minnesota. But as a general proposition, statewide, Minnesota has historically leans blue and sometimes purplish, sometimes light blue, sometimes a little deeper blue. But keep in mind, this is a state that hasn't voted Republican for president of the United States since Richard Nixon. It has the longest unbroken streak of any state in the nation of voting for Democrat in the country, including Massachusetts, Vermont, California, Hawaii, other places that are deemed more wildly liberal. So that gives you a sense of kind of the built-in historic slash political slash cultural advantage that Democrats have enjoyed in statewide races. And the results kind of reflect that. But in the meantime, things have shifted around a bit. I think it's fair to say that since the elevation of Donald Trump and more recently, rural Minnesota, for the most part, has gone red, with the exception of some of the regional centers like Rochester, Mankato, St. Cloud, and a few others. And then the Democrats, of course, politically own Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the first ring suburbs. So the hinge or swing vote really comes down to a few regional centers and surrounding areas and the second and third ring suburbs. The exurbs are mostly Republican. And the Democrats lost, though, made great gains in, say, 10 years ago in those second and third ring suburbs, and really piled on those gains during the last couple elections when Donald Trump was running. But now they have, with the independent voters and those suburban voters, lost ground. So the Republicans see that combined with redistricting and look at inflation, look at concerns about crime and a variety of other issues and say, we've got a big opportunity this fall. And I think they do.
Final question. What are you doing with your free time now? And and are you having any fun now that you don't get, you know, poked and prodded every day for politics?
Well, I love public service and I was honored to serve, and I love getting up every day trying to do something meaningful for Minnesota, and I love public policy and meeting people and trying to make a difference. But I sort of hit the end of the road and so I had to move on to other things, and life is less interesting now in that regard in terms of policy, but it's certainly less stressful. You don't have people wailing on you every day either, so there's some trade-offs involved. So I've been involved in a couple of business things, serving on some boards, but mostly have been semi-retired, boy. So just kind of, I don't want to say goofing off, but more relaxed.
That's okay. It's all right. You and I have known each other a long time. And as a guy who, you know, got paid to wail on you a few times while you were governor, the one thing that people ask or I talk about that I, you know, want to just notice here is that we always were able to shake hands. And we always looked at each other, and there were some days where you said that wasn't very fun. And there were some days where you said that was pretty creative. But I think that that's part of politics, that even if I had a client who was upset with you and we ran an ad or the bus strike, we looked at each other as Minnesotans and shook hands and tried to figure it out. And that's where I'm glad I'm retired from a lot of those kinds of campaigns and things like that, because in this environment, it's not as much fun, and there's not as much acknowledgement that you're human beings and you each have a perspective. So I want to thank you for those years, because we did have fun. And the little secret that we can probably reveal now is that we went to church together. And so we could always talk on Sundays, even though our prospective partners at the time did not always appreciate us solving the world's problems on Sunday morning.
That's all true. Well, I appreciate that. The analogy, I think, is like a sporting match where you know, you compete as hard as you possibly can. You really want to defeat the other side for a variety of reasons. But at the end, you shake hands and you try to be a good sports person. And I would battle somebody all day long on policy and issues and philosophy, but if we can, at the end of the day, keep it, you know, within a bounds of fairness and decency, that helps a lot. So thank you for saying that. And thank you for reflecting that spirit.
Sounds great. When it's Sunday Take at 9. The legislature's on break next week. The governor's going to tour the state. We'll have it all in Morning Take, which you can sign up for at fluence-newsletters.com. I'm Blois Olson. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback. I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.